Representative Edgemond, Fairclough, Wilson, co-chairs Gatto and Johnson are present. Others may arrive shortly. First order of business, we're going to continue where we left off, which was some confirmation hearings. In front of us was Brenda Rebney. Brenda, are you online? Brenda, can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes, Brenda, this Representative Gatto, we are resuming where we left off with your confirmation hearing.
Okay.
You feeling chipper today?
Yes, I am.
Want to add anything that has transpired in the last few days that might be pertinent to, because you heard quite a bit of discussion about your OTNA relationship, your, I think you're vice, you're the, I'm sure, vice president, am I correct?
Corporate affairs, yes.
Okay, I'm trying to recall where he was. We've been joined by Representative Roses. Is there something you'd like to say to lead this off, and then we'll go back into questioning?
Well, I would just, you know, like to say that the last 3 days have been very enlightening. I think it was a good opportunity for me to gain an understanding of that particular user group. So I think it was very beneficial for me to attend those meetings.
Okay, and help us out. How many members are on this committee?
Nine.
And
my understanding is there are two landowners, two transporters, two guides, two from the general public, and one Board of Game representative.
Okay. And so you're one of the two landowners, is that correct?
Yes.
And I'd say, are you the landowner that you're representing, or is it the corporation?
It would be the corporation.
So, and I imagine there's a substantial amount of land, which certainly qualifies you as a landowner. The other landowner member, is it a similar thing, do you know? Because I'm not sure who the other member is.
I'm not sure either, but I do believe it's from another Native corporation.
Okay. So that would be that we'd have two Native corporation landowner members on this.
You know, I shouldn't have even said that because I'm not absolutely positive.
That's okay. I understand that. We're just kind of having to guess at this point, and I don't know. Myself, but anything else that's worth adding at this point before we continue with some questions?
I don't know what else I can add. Why don't you just go ahead and start with the questions?
Okay. Do we have any questions from the committee?
Ask mine last time, so I'm good.
Okay. We've run out of questions, Brenda. How's that for a good start?
Okay.
And so at this point, since we don't have questions for you and we're done with that, is there anyone online or in the audience that would like to question the applicant? Okay, no one online and no one in the room, so I'll close public testimony and come back to the committee. And since we're going to deal with the second person, we can hold off on confirming Brenda. Thanks, Brenda. Stay tight. We're going to go to Ted Spraker, and I'd like you to just listen to...
Ask if I can make a comment on that.
Ted Spraker, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, this is Ted Spraker. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear, and I appreciate that you're offering your services to the board. Welcome to the Resources Committee. We're here to have a couple questions for you, like we did for Brenda Rebney, and I'm curious if you'd like to go ahead and give us the answers to the questions you know we'd like to ask, as Representative Johnson did just last session, is why do you want to do this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to address those questions. If I could, I'd like to make a short opening statement.
Please do.
First off, Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak before the committee today, and I appreciate all the time that you folks put in as well. Again, for the record, my name is Ted Spraker. I live in Soldotna with my family. I was raised in Wyoming. I went to school in Wyoming and completed a bachelor's degree in wildlife management and then a master's degree in range management. I completed my second degree in May of 1973. This is from the University of Wyoming. and then moved to Alaska in July of 1973. So I'm about a 35-year resident to the state, and I'm 59 years of age. As far as career, my career has been centered around working as a wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I worked for the Department of Fish and Game for 28 years and 4 months and retired in 2002. In January of 2003, I was appointed to the Board of Game. I served a couple years of a term, my first term, and then my second term was a complete three-year term, and I was recently reappointed by Governor Palin for my third term on the Board of Game. During the last 2 years on the Board of Game, I served as the vice chair, and I'm still in that position presently. I also serve as the Board of Game's representative to the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and I've been on the Commercial Services Board since it started, and that's been about 3 years now. Mr. Chairman, as far as just kind of a summarizing statement, wildlife management and working with the public has been my lifelong career. I really enjoy the opportunity to work on both of these boards and look forward to continuing my service on both of these boards. And there I'll stop and do my best to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, committee. Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ted, for waiting till day number two to take questions. We have in our possession a letter from Aetna Incorporated that is opposing your reappointment. And so I have a couple questions regarding your past service. And then, if you could give me an overview of why do you think the corporation is opposing your appointment and the overview of the composite of the board.
Let me just ask, Ted, do you have the letter?
Mr. Chairman, I do not. I kind of know the gist of the letter in talking to Brenda the other day, so I'm pretty familiar with it. I also talked to the author of the letter at length a month or so ago, and I think I'm prepared to answer at least most of the questions.
Okay, it puts you at a somewhat disadvantage, but we'll do the best we can. It does refer, consistently promoted the non-subsistence utilization, inability to understand the merits of customary and traditional use, and is not capable of protecting the hunting and fishing rights for all Alaskans. Hopefully that's enough information, and you can see it's strongly worded. And apologize that you don't have a copy, but Representative Faircloth has the question, and just wanted to see if indeed you had it in front of you, but you have at least had a discussion with Ken Johns, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
If you'd like, we can fax you a copy. Would that be helpful? Because the letter may be referred to by a couple of us.
Let me just take a shot at it, and we'll see how far we can get. But I think I can explain the reasons. And again, let me just start, and we'll see how far we can get. First off, shortly after moving to Alaska, 1974 in September, I was transferred to Glen Allen, and I worked there as a wildlife biologist for 4 years, and I met Kenny Johns. I consider him a friend. We have had some differences in opinion over the years. We've always respected each other's opinions, even if they were different. When I was appointed this third time to the Board of Game, Mr. Frank Bailey said that you have some opposition. You have a letter in opposition to your reappointment. Would you call, Ken Johns and discuss this with him? And I said, sure, I know him. I'll be glad to call him. And I talked to him at length. And again, we have a few differences. And one of the things that I'm kind of afraid that he wants me to do, I'm not sure afraid is the right term, but I think Ken Johns looks at my position on the Board of Games, since I've known him for such a long time, that I would have been kind of the champion for a lot of the things that he wanted changed in Unit 13. And we discussed these issues, and they all pretty much revolved around rural preference. And I did my best to try to explain to him that that is something the law does not allow us to do. We have a mandate on the Board of Game to strictly adhere to the state laws, and we do that. And I can't be a champion for you or other folks in Otna to try to change this to rural preference. I was involved in a subcommittee for at least a couple years trying to sort out some of the problems we have with hunting caribou in Unit 13, which is the Glen Allen area, the Otna Corporation area. And to be honest with you, we've not made much for headway. One of the things that Mr. Johns and I really disagreed on was the Board of Game approved a cap for people that qualify for Tier 2 hunting of caribou in Unit 13. That eliminated Mr. Johns, and he was very critical of the board's position and extremely critical of my position on voting for that. The vote was about 6-1. And again, we discussed it. My feelings were presented to him on my vote. I said that because the law requires that we look at the people that most need the resource and are most dependent on the resource and as a mainstay of their livelihood, that I couldn't understand how people that had incomes that allowed them to have cabins and airplanes and big motor homes and things like that could pass the red face test on qualifying and needing a subsistence caribou. And I supported that proposal. Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there. I could go on, but Mr. Johns and I are friends. We have some clear differences. He's the CEO, and I understand and respect his position. He has a lot of folks that look to him to change a lot of things to make them better, and the Board of Game has not been as favorable as he hopes we are, he wanted us to be, and I think that's where the letter came from. And I'll do my best to answer any other questions pertaining to that.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Representative Fairclough has a follow-up question.
Mr. Spricker, what I was trying to get to was the composite of the boards. I think it's important to have a subsistence voice as well as a voice from hunting, trapping, a rural, however that is. I'm wondering or curious about the composite of the board as it exists today.
On both boards that Representative Fairclough, the composite of the board currently, the chairman is from Wasilla. We have one member that's from Anchorage. We have one member from Sitka. We have one member that's from Fairbanks. And we have one member that's from Fort Yukon, and I'm from Soldotna. The member from Fort Yukon is Craig Fleener, and he is a Alaska Native, has a master's degree in wildlife management.
We've met Craig.
And you know Craig, he's an excellent member of the board. I could also add another question on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. We actually have two Alaska Natives. The other one besides Brenda is Raymond Stoney from Kiana.
I wasn't so much looking for heritage as points of opinion. Just like in the legislature, it is very good when you enter a debate to have different voices from across Alaska to understand how the decisions that we make affect those particular regions and the voice that they carry. So what I'm interested in is there a representative that currently is speaking to the subsistence issue loud enough that they are heard and recognized by both boards? And is there a a hunting perspective, because I think that you and Mr. Fleener certainly speak to the biology and the wildlife management issue. So I'm just wanting to make sure that, that we're balancing the board in a way that's beneficial to all Alaskans.
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, I think there is. I think all members are longtime Alaskans to start with. I'm the new guy on the committee with 35 or more years, and I think that certainly Member Fleener has a strong background in subsistence, and all the other members strive to support subsistence. I think we have a very good record of supporting subsistence. We have a law that we deal with as far as the amount necessary for subsistence. We adhere to those very carefully when we make decisions. As far as Unit 13, you know, that's the issue where the board always seems to be getting in trouble over subsistence. But if you look at the rest of the state and all the issues we deal with and all the decisions we've made across the state, I feel strongly that this board actually has a very good record of supporting and providing for subsistence.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I have two more questions. One is, with your permission, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Spraker, when you serve in your capacity from the Board of Game on the Big Game Commercial Service Board, do they have a similar balance?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, they do have a fairly widespread balance. As Brenda Rebney explained, we have guides, we have transporters, we have private landowners, we have two members that are just at-large members, we have two Alaska Natives on our committee, and we really look forward to the comments and the input by Raymond and Brenda, and I certainly support Brenda. I hope she stays on this committee, because she brings a new aspect to the committee, because we've all on the Big Game Commercial Services Board have worked towards getting more Alaska Natives involved in transporting and involved in guiding, and very few of them are currently involved in this industry. And we look to these two individuals to be kind of our guides and our help as far as trying to break more Alaska Natives into this industry. So I think that board is very well balanced, and Brenda's done an excellent job. She's only been around for a three-day meeting now, but she learned quickly. She asked a lot of very good questions, and I think she was really getting up to speed quickly on the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Spraker, the balance that I was asking about, again, was not ethnicity. It was whether there is a balance in voices that understand and can appreciate and cooperate between commercial hunting or sports hunting and subsistence. And is that balance there, too?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, that balance is on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. We do talk about those issues.
Thank you. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for taking the questions, and I appreciate your professionalism in answering that. I know that it's difficult when people challenge appointments or create opposition, but they have a voice too, and it's difficult for them to bring that those comments forward. Mr. Spraker, can you tell me unequivocally that when something comes before you, that you'll treat that in a manner that's fair and consistent with the law when you look at Big Game issues for a Unit 13 or across Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, without a doubt. I pride myself in trying to be as fair as I possibly can. I also read and try to understand the law and the direction required by that law, and I can certainly promise you that I'll continue to do my best.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And Brenda, are you still online? Brenda Rebney?
Yes, I am.
Did you by chance pay attention to the last question that Representative Faircloth asked Ted Spraker?
Regarding the makeup of the big game board?
No, I'm going to ask her to repeat the question, and then I'd like you to answer it also. So,
right.
Representative Faircloth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Brenda. Thank you for waiting. What I asked Mr. Spraker was, could he, to the best of his ability, listen to all issues that are brought before the board, and consistent with the laws of the state of Alaska, apply those in your service?
Yes, I believe I can do that. I think I mentioned earlier that this was a very educational process for me in the last couple of days, and understanding the, you know, the regulations that apply to guides and transporters was very beneficial to me in understanding, you know, just understanding that user group. I think that I welcome that opportunity and am quite capable of doing that.
Mr. Chairman, I have no qualms about recommending the individuals that the governor has presented to us. I know that they have different points of view, different vantage points from across the state, but I do believe that healthy debate is good for laws. I do believe that if everyone sings off the same page, that sometimes we hurt communities that we don't know about. And with that, even though I think that there may be some really loud voices right now serving us, I think they serve us well. And with that, I'll support the names that have been submitted by the governor.
Okay. Representative Roses.
Thank you. I don't have any questions. I wanted to echo the sentiments that Representative Faircloth just stated. I don't want to put a board together that doesn't have diversity. I don't want to put a board together that doesn't have some diverse opinions. It makes the meetings go fast when everybody agrees, but I don't think you get the best pieces of legislation. So I don't want people on there that are just, you know, absolute enemies of each other where they can't get anything done because they're constantly in turmoil over personal issues, but certainly do not want anybody to go in there and rubber stamp a process. So I appreciate the diversity that they bring. I can only imagine some of the discussions they probably have will be quite heated. So I, too, will support the supporting all three of these names.
Okay. And Representative Edgman has a question.
Good afternoon, Mr. Spraker. Would it be wrong for me to assume that you would be supporting the governor's active game management bill? I think it's House Bill 256.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I strongly support that. And I'm very pleased to support the governor on the effort that she has made. She has provided the money and the staff to provide a tremendous amount of information regarding the predator management to residents across our state. She's required the Board of Game members to go to these different communities and rotary clubs and whatever we can, you know, talk people into listening to us to provide this unbiased information about management of predators across our state. And I really support that. As far as trying to eliminate the opportunity for people in the state to bring initiatives like we've dealt with in the past, I think that should be passed. I support it. And I support it because if you look at the amount of money that's spent every year to fight these battles, and if that money was put towards wildlife management, we'd be much further ahead. And I think that the state of Alaska has the most open and public opportunity for individuals to come to the Board of Game to work with the 80 advisory committees to get their input heard and get regulations changed. We have the most open system in the country to deal with. We have a very large fishing game, provides the information out to the public, and I really don't like ballot box biology. I think we have the people, the places, and the system to accommodate everyone's needs. And I think that's the way the system should be carried out.
Thank you.
Other questions? Brenda, this Representative Gatto again. In the previous day's testimony, you used the words, the exact words were, close to these. I want to move forward. I don't know if you can recall saying that, but can you tell me what you meant by it?
Well, I think that, it's very important for us all to recognize that, and Mr. Spraker has a clear grasp of this. There are areas that we just are not going to come together on, but it's very important for us to move forward and try and identify the areas that we can, and at least start from there. I think an example of, I've mentioned that I learned a lot in the last few days of meetings. The guides, the transporters, you know, there were at least three things that I identified and where we had common ground. One of them was we are concerned with overcrowding out in rural Alaska, concerned with over-harvesting, and those are just two areas. And then also, I found it very interesting that many of the guides had a similar tie, much as Native people do to their lands, to their areas that they use or have been using for many, many years. And they have the same emotions associated with those areas that many of the Native community have on their lands. And I thought that was very interesting because that's something that I didn't know. Because I was never familiar with them except in a position of opposition, I guess, it never really occurred to me. But they have, you know, this very similar concerns about over-harvesting. I just think that there's room for us to work together and move forward in these areas where we share common interests.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Oh, certainly. We on the board here really want to make sure that this is a board that is fair, honest, and balanced. And we don't want to see a board get lopsided where all the decisions favor one group, and usually that means at the expense of another group. There are several different groups here that deserve a representation and recognition. And what we're trying to do by assembling the board is to make sure that you and others on the board with you can truly look outside of your personal desires and recognize that the state constitution does talk about all users, and we want to make sure here that we get that. With that, seeing no other questions from the board, I'm going to ask Representative Johnson to make one final statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having reviewed the qualifications of the appointees, I move that the House Resources Committee forward the names of appointee Ted Spraker, Brenda Rebney, and Frank Coleman to a joint session for consideration.
And seeing no objections, so ordered. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate that your willingness to serve, and we're looking forward to hearing about you. With that, we'll move on to...
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Poor Brenda.
We can hear you.
I don't know where to go with that one. But we're back now to a bill being offered by Representative Newman.
No.
Wrong one. Oh, I'm sorry.
This will go quick.
Second order of business is Senate Bill 253, enacting relating to the appointment of members of the Board of Game and providing for an effective date. And we see, the famous Jody Simpson here, the Wasilla Assembly member in the pub past.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I am Jody Simpson, and I am staff to Senator Huggins. And he sends his regards and his regrets that he's not able to be here to introduce this bill to you this afternoon. Before you is Senate Bill 253, and a couple of you have already heard this bill. And so you will remember that this is a simple adjustment in the expiration date for the terms of future Board of Game members from March 1st to June 30th. The statute, if changed, will prevent problems that arise from the short time frame for newly appointed members to prepare for the large regulatory board meetings that occur near the beginning of March every year. It will reduce the confusion among the public over which board member to contact on issues. It will clarify the time by which appointments should be made and bring the terms in line with those that are currently in place for the state's Board of Fisheries. The change will also avoid problems with having two or three of the seven board members serving in an unconfirmed status during the March meeting each year new members are aware their March meeting record, or their March meeting voting record, will be examined during their legislative confirmation hearings, and there can be undue scrutiny on a single vote instead of the nominee's overall qualifications. Your packet should have contained a letter from the Board of Game President Cliff Judkins requesting this change, and also a letter from Mr. Jim Marcotte, the Executive Director for Board Support Section for the State of Alaska, outlining the implications of the changes. This proposed adjustment in term expiration date recognizes the importance of the Board of Game and the complexity of the issues that come before it, and I join Senator Huggins in urging your approval of this bill. You have in the audience this afternoon Mr. Jim Marcotte, as I mentioned. He's the director of the Board Support Section for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and Ms. Christy Tibbles, who's the executive director for the Board of Game, and they are here to answer questions if you have them. With that, Mr. Chairman, I conclude.
Thank you, Jody. It's a pleasure to have you here. Any questions from the members? Seeing and hearing no questions from the members. Representative Wilson.
Would you like a motion?
I'd appreciate
public
that.
Any public testimony?
I'm sorry. Is there any public testimony, anyone in the audience or anyone online?
Christy, why?
Christy, we, I'm sure.
Yeah, let me reread it.
What is that term when you're when you've got the votes? Quit talking. When you don't have the votes, keep talking. Do you feel like you don't have the votes?
No, I don't. I feel like we have the votes. I'd be happy to go back there if you'd like me to.
Now you can't. Identify yourself and affiliation and give us your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Christy Tibbles, Executive Director for the Board of Game, and I just wanted to pass on the support by the Board of Game and Department of Fish and Game and reaffirm those things that Jody had provided to you. And just quickly to reiterate one more thing is that the challenge that one of the bigger challenges we face with the Board of Game is that board members are often appointed shortly before this large regulatory meeting that happens in the spring, usually the end of February or the beginning of March, and so changing their appointment date will greatly benefit their ability to prepare for these meetings. So just ask for your support for the legislation.
Okay, questions? No questions? You're excused. Thank you very much for, because that's, you know, a couple of lines here or there give us some measure of ability to understand things that we're about to vote on here a little better. So, members, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill number...
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. Would you close public testimony?
Public testimony is closed. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Try again. I move Senate Bill number 253, version A, out of with its zero fiscal note, out of committee with individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, bill moves from committee. We now get to the third and final order of business, House Bill 267, the sale of raw milk. Let me give you a recap so we can kind of catch up to where we were. What we have in front of us is actually a work draft that incorporates amendments numbers 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Amendment number 1 is not included because it was withdrawn. And so I'd like a motion to at least adopt the work draft, and then we will consider amendment number 7, which was before us when we adjourned. Version C, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we would adopt work draft for House Bill number 367, designated 25LS1429/C Bannister 31108.
Okay, is there an objection?
I'll object for one moment. The sponsor was saying it was B, not C.
I was wrong.
No, it's C.
It's C.
Okay. Objection is withdrawn. So, seeing and hearing no other objection, we have before us work draft C, which incorporates amendments 2 through 6. I would say I'm going to allow Representative Newman to make some comments, and then we will go right into the amendment number 7, which was before us when we adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mark Newman, District 15. I don't think I can add a whole lot to the discussion of the 4 hours prior that we've had in this, or I don't know, 3.5 plus hours. We did put in the suggestions that were brought forth by the committee. I don't know if we've, if you'd like me to go through them. I think they were pretty straightforward, and there is a statement in your packet that talks about them. If you would like me to discuss my opinion on amendment number 7, I will do that, Mr. Chair.
Has it been moved?
Or if would you like maybe the carrier of the amendment to address it, and then me to address it after that?
Yeah, the amendment was moved and it was before us. Madam Clerk, is that
moved but not accepted?
But we adjourned, so we still have the amendment before us.
Can you read that one, the amendment?
Yeah. Can we get Louie to come forward and identify yourself and...
And then I'll just address it when he's done.
Okay. And Louie, you brought this facts about antibiotic resistance page that we have with us?
Yes. Okay. My name is Louie Fleur. I'm staff to Representative Seaton. And I provided the committee aide with a fact sheet, a couple bullet points on antibiotic resistance, just for the committee's edification. Goes along with the proposed Amendment 7. And Representative Seaton introduced the amendment earlier in the previous committee when we discussed House Bill 367. The intent of the amendment is, as he discussed, to get away from the public health issue with the antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which, as previous testimony in the committee discussed, is prevalent in or can be prevalent in raw milk products, and when unpasteurized can be transmitted to the consuming public. And so the intent of the amendment is to get away from that public health issue, and by stating that if a raw milk sale is taking place, it must be from an animal that has never received antibiotics.
Okay, and that is the essence of the amendment. Do you have the amendment in front of you?
Yes.
Okay. Question I have is, do we have the amendment in front of us?
I think it's in our packet, isn't it?
It's Amendment A1. Amendment number 7.
I have it. Yeah, it's A.1. And it simply says under delete A, and it's heard except as provided in B of this section, and B is a raw milk product may not be sold under this section if the animal that produced the raw milk for the raw milk product has, and this key word, has ever been treated with antibiotics. In this subsection, treated with antibiotics includes being injected with antibiotics or being fed antibiotics. That's the question before us, committee members.
Mr. Chairman, who do we have on someone online, a vet or anyone online that can test? I can ask questions of Kristen Ryan.
Kristen Ryan, are you online, or would you like to step forward instead?
Here.
I'm present.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. For the record, Kristen Ryan, the director for the Division of Environmental Health, Marit is passing out a fact sheet that we prepared about antibiotic resistance that I apologize didn't get to you sooner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
No, that came from Seaton's office. Sorry.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you. Can you tell me how long antibiotics stay in the system of an animal?
Representative, I cannot answer that for you. I'm sorry, the state vet isn't available. I do know that our current regulations for pasteurized milk, each antibiotic has a different length of time, and depending on what the antibiotic is, you're not allowed to milk that animal before within that length of time, and it's outlined in federal regulations what those length of times are required to be.
Follow up. Representative Johnson.
Do the antibiotics stay in the meat?
Representative Johnson, I I can't answer that for you. I don't believe so, because it's pretty much the same rules that apply to the sale of meat.
But that,
go ahead.
Mr. Chairman,
sure, go ahead.
My point is that I do believe that if you inject an antibiotic into a cow, that it would stay in the meat, and it wouldn't stay there forever.
Right.
And that's information that I have. But pending
the
bottle, there is a clear, say you cannot be milked, must be isolated. On every, and every type of antibiotic has its own little thing, and it has to be isolated. The milk must be dumped. Do you know if the same is true with the meat?
Representative, I do not. We do not regulate the meat production in the state anymore. We gave that program back up to the federal government. But I think it's pretty similar to milk. There's a time limit where the chemical is considered to exist in the body, and at that point, most of it is flushed out when it's safe to sell again.
I guess, Ms., if I could, do you support this amendment?
The information I've passed around sort of explains our position. Antibiotic resistance is a problem, but we believe in the safe use of antibiotics on the farm. We believe animals should, they should, in fact, it could be considered, you know, a cruelty issue if you know your animal is sick and you're not, you're choosing not to use antibiotics. So we don't support banning antibiotic use on farms.
But this amendment does say that once used, cow cannot be used for raw milk. But let me ask you another question. Antibiotic is a chemical, not a bacteria or a critter or something or an antibody. So does cooking denature the chemical to the point where it becomes something different than the antibiotic itself?
I don't believe so. I'll have to get back to you about what that would incur. I don't know, Representative. I apologize.
And because, you know, pasteurization,
mm-hmm.
We're after the bacteria,
mm-hmm.
and so we don't need antibiotics if we're going to kill the bacteria some other way. It's the raw milk issue that we're not killing the bacteria. Milk is being fed mostly to children, and maybe they're the most susceptible in the population. And Representative Seaton's point was, do we want to give a resistant strain of bacteria to the most vulnerable section of the population? I think, Louis, is that essentially it? And by disallowing it to any cow that's had an antibiotic, simply be used for anything but milk production. I think that's where we are with this amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could call it the committee's attention to a handout that was in today's literature, and
from
it is
Cornell.
From Cornell University, and it says it has the bacterial count for raw milk and pasteurized milk, and even pasteurization still leaves,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know that I understand, 20,000 millimoles, whatever.
Correct.
Total count. Of bacteria, so even pasteurization doesn't kill all of it. And it also goes on to say that a raw milk, which is produced properly, could have less than 1,000 of this critter in it, which is 20 times less than pasteurized milk if done properly. So my concern is that the word ever, if you ever give an antibiotic to a cow, that milk will never be allowed to be used for raw milk sales. And even according to the Cornell study, those antibacterial bugs are resistant to antibiotics or still could be present in a fairly substantial amount, even in pasteurized milk. I think another follow-up question, if I could.
Sure.
What is the penalty if someone were to sell milk to someone who had and had violated the date on the, had given antibiotics within the limit? Is there a penalty for that, or is there any way of checking that?
Representative, we check the milk for the pasteurized milk sold currently. There's they are not allowed to have antibiotics within the milk that's being processed for pasteurization. And if we find it, which we occasionally do, if there's an animal that somehow got treated with antibiotics and just was milked, the entire tank of milk has to be dumped at the cost to the process or the dairy farmer who So it's a great expense to them, and they prefer to avoid that situation. They lose all of that, all that milk. So it's tested before it goes into commerce so that that does not occur.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kristen, do you know, like if a cow has mastitis or something like that, do you know how long it is before that cow can be, I know it depends on the antibiotic, but how is there like a 30, I mean, an overall, like that would cover quite a bit of it, like 30 days. Do you know, is there a fundamental, or do you just check the milk and that's the way you deal with it?
Representative, through the chair, we're checking the milk. I mean, there are standards they have to comply with, and we make sure they do that. But ultimately, our goal is to make sure that no milk is ever sold with an antibiotic residue in it. So that's where, I guess, the stopgap exists. Antibiotics are used frequently on the farm, and we're aware of that, and it's just common practice. And I don't believe you would ever be able to sell raw milk if this amendment passed as written. So.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Do you think if we said got rid of the ever and put antibiotics, been treated with antibiotics in the last 30 days, would that cover it, do you think? Or do we need to spread it to 60 days? I mean,
Representative, I think you don't want to get that specific. I believe the current federal guidelines are very accurate and followed closely and do the job sufficiently as is.
So we really don't need this amendment, is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that. That's for you to decide, but I'm just telling you that we already monitor for antibiotics pretty heavily because we're concerned that there's residues in the milk and we don't want people to get that because they could have allergies, there could be lots of bad things that could occur. But if you're worried about resistant bacteria, that's a very different situation than residue, which is what I'm worried about.
Okay. Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, just as I recall, we've taken out all of the testing requirements for this, is my only point to make right now on the antibiotic issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another question, Chris. If this bill went in, became law, would you then find that you would need to go once in a while to these places that sold raw milk and test the milk so that you would kind of catch it, you know, if there was something like that going on?
Representative, through the chair, as we've previously testified, our fiscal note reflects us building a program consistent with how we regulate pasteurized milk, which would involve testing. So yes, our intent would be to require testing to make sure there's no antibiotics in raw milk like we do in pasteurized milk.
Hey, online, Dr. McLaughlin, are you there?
Mr. Sherman, yes, I am.
Did you want to, it says yes, that you wanted to testify?
Sure, if that's okay. Mr. Chairman, is that in relation to this particular amendment or in relation to the bill itself?
We currently have the amendment before us, so we'll get to the bill, but we need to dispose of the amendment first.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I have nothing to add unless people have specific questions for me related to the amendment.
Okay. Representative Edgman has a question.
Actually, I think my question was more for Ms. Ryan, who now has left the...
Almost got out the door.
I have another earring, so I'm two bills.
I hope it's not on raw milk.
No, just real quickly, and thanks for going back to the previous testifier. Would there be the opportunity to test, as we were just talking a moment ago, for antibiotics? Do you have that ability in regulations at the moment?
Representative Edgman, through the chair, yes, we have the authority in statute to do that because of, as you can see it even in this legislation, under Section 1, it requires that we regulate milk in compliance with the pasteurized milk ordinance, which is the federal regulations that allow us to do all sorts of things for milk. The raw milk section, which is the new section being added in Section 2, it doesn't necessarily speak to how we would regulate it. It just says we should allow the sale of it. So at this point, you have been silent on that issue. We have continually testified that we would intend to build a program similar to how we regulate pasteurized milk, and our fiscal note reflects that. So I guess the bill is sort of silent on the issue, and we're saying we would implement as stringent a program as we could, even though we still don't believe that's adequate.
Thank you.
And that's all within the statute that exists. You have that privilege to move, because milk is milk is milk.
No, Representative, the statute is clear on pasteurized milk. It's silent on raw milk. So I just, that's how we would interpret it, that we would still try to attempt to do that with the way the bill's written. But
Representative Roses?
Not a question, but a statement in regard to that, since it's obvious she needs to rush off to another hearing. Even though it's not the intent in this bill, I appreciate the fact that that's where you would like to go, but I want to express my concern that that is my intent as a legislator, that they would build a set of regulations that would guarantee the testing procedures similar to what we have for milk now, so that the public has some relative assurance that testing is being done. So I would like to get it on the record that it is my intent that you would do that.
And Representative Wilson is nodding her head yes, and so am I, and so is Representative Faircloth, and my guess is that's for your sake.
Thank you.
The committee as a whole is in agreement, even those people that aren't here. Representative Faircloth?
Mr. Chairman, that is the point, though, that Representative Newman had made previous when he spoke to us, is that the fiscal note, there had been some question whether this should go to the Finance Committee or not. And so this bill is silent on it, and it's making a case for not going to the Finance Committee because it doesn't have those restrictions inside of the document. At least that's the testimony I remember hearing in the past. And so I know it's still scheduled for Finance, but that was the conversation, as I recall, previous to this. But I definitely support some kind of a health check on the quality assurance side for consumers.
And Kristen, within your current budget, would you be able to perform these tests, or would there be a request for an additional position?
Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note is requesting 3 additional positions. No, we would not be able to do it within our current budget.
Okay, thank you. So because the fiscal note does ask for that, then it does go to Finance. Okay. Any other questions before we let her go out the open door? Run fast.
Just where's your next testimony? We need you.
Send it
us. Get her cell number.
Send it us.
Okay, and Mr. McLaughlin, Doc McLaughlin, are you still online?
Mr. Chairman, I am.
And the things you've heard so far, did you want to make a comment? Because we have Representative Newman, the bill sponsor, now up before us, and we'll like to get your testimony involved as much as we can. Do you want to say something first or wait until you've heard some more?
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to speak either now or after Representative Newman speaks, whichever is best for you all.
Okay.
We should dispose of the amendment if we can, sir.
That's a good point. Yeah. We have amendment number 7 before us. Is there any other?
I did have a question of the docker.
Does it deal with amendment number 7?
Yes, it does.
Okay, go ahead. Yes, we have a question for you, Doc, from Representative Roses.
On amendment number 7, we are discussing the resistant bacteria. And the question that was asked earlier was, is there a relatively standard length of time for each of these different antibiotics, or is there sort of a range? And then when that question was answered, we were told that we're probably better off to not name a specific amount of time that the milk could not be used, and I just wanted your input on that.
Representative, through the chair, each antibiotic is different with respect to its half-life, and some antibiotics have a half-life on the order of hours, and some antibiotics have a half-life that's on the order of up to days. And so it really just depends on the antibiotic. And I would just say that I think Kristen Ryan's testimony was very accurate, and basically I just support what she said.
My follow-up?
Representative Roses.
So you would be fairly comfortable, regardless of whether you supported or didn't support the raw milk concept, you would be supportive of the fact that in this particular amendment, that the regulations you have in place right now leads a certain degree of certainty in terms of not being able to sell that milk based on the recommendations of the particular antibiotic, and you're relatively comfortable with that the way it is?
Representative, through the chair, I think Kristen Ryan's testimony, where she basically stated that DEC already has a fairly elaborate testing process that they go through, and I feel as though that current testing process that they have is sufficient to determine whether or not there's antibiotic in the milk. I think just sort of a follow-up to that, though, is, you know, antibiotic-resistant bacteria can appear in an individual cow as a result of inadequate therapy, antibiotic therapy to a bacterial infection. However, there are other ways by which cows can basically become colonized with these antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And, you know, they can be spread from farm to farm, from cow to cow, just by, you know, socializing with other cows and through the feed and whatnot. And so, really, this is a larger issue that we're dealing with nationwide and really worldwide, particularly in developing developed countries, where we're starting to see antibiotic-resistant bacteria on farms throughout the developed world. And whether or not an individual cow or other livestock animal had ever received antibiotics in the past.
Thank you.
Doc, this is Representative Gatto. I guess the word antibiotic, I mean, every member of this committee probably has antibodies running through their system. Am I correct there?
Mr. Chairman, you're correct.
And so, because it's so natural, I mean, we get a cough, we get a cold, we get a fever, we get antibodies. And because we have those antibodies in us, we sometimes add additional antibodies, which are not made by the individual they're in. Are those different enough so that they should be treated differently, or are they essentially the same antibodies, just that we take them because we want to get the titer level up quickly rather than wait for our body to produce its own immunity?
Mr. Chairman, I think maybe I can try and explain. There are three different sort of things that I think we're talking about. One is antibiotics, and antibiotics are basically drugs or chemicals that are produced to actually kill bacteria. And then our bodies actually have antibodies that we develop on our own as a result of antigens that become introduced into the system, into the human body or the whatever animal it is. And those antibodies can kill, you know, and are currently killing in each one of our bodies potentially offending pathogens. Some bacteria, some human pathogens are more resistant to the body's immune system, and some are less resistant to the body's immune system. And so for those bacteria that, you know, really wreak havoc on the body, those are the ones that we are really concerned about, and those are the ones that we develop antibiotics for to help our own immune system fight those pathogens off. And when those pathogens develop resistance to antibiotics, that's where we get into some serious trouble, as we've seen with the multi-drug resistant tuberculosis that hit the news this year. And we're seeing this in all sorts of different human pathogens, you know, from salmonella to tuberculosis to, we're seeing it now in influenza, and it's becoming a big concern with pandemic influenza, whether or not we can use oseltamivir, which is a drug used to fight off the influenza virus, and now we're starting to see oseltamivir resistance. And so this is something that's, you know, just escalating in concern, and as we continue to use antibiotics in the healthcare setting, we'll continue to see more and more antibiotic-resistant pathogens emerge.
There we have it. Let me ask you one question then. You're familiar with the amendment. If we wanted to pass the bill with the amendment or pass the bill without the amendment, can you tell me what the significance of passing the bill with the amendment would be relative to without it?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that I'm the best person to ask about this. I think that it would have been nice to have heard from you know, Kristen Ryan a little bit more on this, or perhaps the state veterinarian. You know, I guess my concern is much larger than just this amendment, and I will sort of express my concerns, I think, after Representative Newman speaks. But my understanding is that the Department of Environmental Conservation currently has a monitoring system in place that is able to determine whether or not the milk that's being sold has antibiotics in it. And I guess the big question is the Department of Environmental Conservation going to be able to go to these small farms, you know, some of the smaller ma-and-pa farms that are selling raw milk, and determine whether or not antibiotics are actually in that milk? And the answer to that seems apparent to me is that no, they're not going to be able to do that. They may be able to do it with some of the farms and maybe all of the farms some of the time, but they're not going to be able to do it with all of the farms all of the time. They just don't have the capacity to do that.
Well, are you saying that voluntary compliance by small farms has a failure rate?
Mr. Chairman, voluntary compliance with what specifically?
With not selling milk from cows that have been treated with antibiotics.
Oh, I see. So if the amendment were to stand, then I think that the risk of raw milk being sold with antibiotics in it would certainly decrease.
Representative Johnson has a question for you.
Thank you. If I were to administer antibiotics to a cow a year ago, would you be able to test the milk and tell if I'd ever put antibiotics in that cow?
Representative, through the chair, 1 year ago, was that your question?
That's correct. Or 6 months?
Not Representative, through the chair, not to my knowledge, no.
30 days?
Representative, through the chair, we can actually go back and research this and try and come up with a definitive number for you, if that's what you're looking for.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I guess the point is there's no way you can tell me if a cow's never had an antibiotic. If it doesn't test, if you run a test, you can't tell me that a year ago or ever had an antibiotic. There's no way you could know that.
Mr. Chairman, this is Dr. Joe McLaughlin. I would agree with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Chair, do we know who objected to the amendment? Seaton made the amendment. I can't remember who objected. I think I did, by the way.
No.
I will maintain my objection.
Okay.
If you didn't, I would.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in this discussion as whole, you know, certainly there's no way to find out if a cow or an animal has ever been treated. In discussions, after the meeting last week, I went and I talked to our state vet, Bob Gerlach. And that's where this information, I believe, came from that we got that talks about treatment of animals. And he said it was his opinion that if you did not treat an animal with an antibiotic, and I think we just heard Kristen say that, that would be considered cruelty. You have to do that. It's animal husbandry. It's the natural care of an animal to keep an animal healthy. If you didn't keep an animal healthy and sold milk, then you would probably have a problem. There is testing that will go on. That's why there is a fiscal note attached with this. And, Representative Faircloth asked, and if I may, it says, DEC under Alaska statute would regulate raw milk similar to what is currently being done for other milk products.
Mr. Chairman,
we've also heard that
Representative Newman, you have a question from Representative Johnson.
I appreciate Representative Newman's testimony, but for expediency, I'd like to call the question.
That's fine. I'll just say this, one more statement. Should a mother be able to breastfeed if she's ever had an antibiotic? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll still call the question.
Okay.
There's no objection.
Objection is maintained. Madam Clerk.
And this is Amendment Number 7.
Amendment Number 7.
Thank you.
Unamended.
Amendment 7. Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Kawasaki is absent. Representative Fairclough?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Seaton is absent. Representative Roses?
No.
Representative Guttenberg? Absent. Co-Chair Johnson?
No.
Co-Chair Gatto?
Unanimous. Okay. By unanimous vote, Amendment Number 7 is not adopted. We now have House Bill before us, House Bill 367 as amended. I think we've probably spent an awful lot of time on this already. I believe it's been as vetted as we can make it. The will of the committee is before us. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move CS for House Bill 367, 25LS1429-C, as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing no objection, congratulations, Representative Newman, for your endurance.
Thank you, sir.
And the bill is on its way.
Yeah. Good luck with the finance.
With that, pardon me? Oh, yeah, we have to sign.
Mr. Chairman, in moving that last bill, I think there may be an additional forthcoming fiscal note, so I would like to
amend the
movement of that bill to add individual recommendations and forthcoming fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Friendly amendment. Representative Fairclough agrees, so it moves with the additional term forthcoming amendments. With that, our need is only
fiscal.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Representative Wilson. Forthcoming fiscal notes. I think we've got it out correctly now. With that, is there any reason not to adjourn?
Not
with that, we are adjourned.